So my point is, I don't like talking to people on planes. My trick is to bring a pillow with me, like a full bedroom pillow. Every flight. And I was flying home from a gig, and I put the pillow down, I put my head down. And the flight attendant comes racing over. And she says, "You can't have a pillow in the exit row." And I said, "But I do." It appears we're at an impasse. She said, "Well, what happens if we crash?" I said, "It'll help."
Steve Hofstetter, who also has a whole bit, he's 6 foot four, about the overhead bin's not an overhead bin. It's just a bin. Yeah. You're playing tonight, comedian playing at Funny Bone in Hartford, which is actually at the Buckland Hills Mall in Manchester at 7 p.m. tonight. First of all, good morning.
Good morning.
And you brought your buddy in.
Yeah, I got my dog Daubert with me. I try to tour with him as much as possible.
And will he come to the club?
Yeah, he'll probably be in the green room. Every now and then he gets a little antsy in the green room, and so then I end the show with a Q&A, and I'll take him out on stage for the Q&A, because like during the rest of the show there's someone else in the green room also.
Right.
But he doesn't have separation anxiety. He has FOMO. Like, he's someone where it doesn't matter if I leave. If I leave, he doesn't care. There's another person. He's like, "Oh, good attention." The second he's alone, he's like, "But other people are having fun without me."
Is it is he a mix? I mean, you adopt him, but is it a dachshund? What is he?
I think he's part Doberman, part Shrink-Ray.
Yeah, he's adorable.
He's probably a Minpin. But yeah, not sure. Part Minpin, part Batman. I don't know.
Listen, I have so many things I want to talk about.
Okay.
Both, like, comedic and serious. Like, do you feel like, because you're like a social satirist and you know, you're cultural, you make cultural commentary. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's funny, but like, it's, you're really like a, it's not like Bill Maher, but it's very focused on political, social.
I'm a political comedian.
Yeah. And do you feel the need, like with me or like in, like, I'm just always curious when I talk to comedians, like, do you feel like you have to be funny wherever you go?
No, I'm a person first. I mean, I kind of have to be funny somewhat today because I'm here in a professional capacity.
Right.
But like, if I'm at Chipotle, I'm not trying to like crack up the clerk. Like, that's just obnoxious.
Right.
There are comedians who cannot turn it off, and they, there's a word for that, and it's hack.
They're hacks.
Yeah, just the idea of like, if you, a good comedian is not someone who knows when to be funny. It's someone who knows when not to. Hmm. Like, if you're constantly trying to be the center of attention, if you're constantly trying to crack everybody up, you have a huge hole in
your life.
Yeah. Yeah, like that you're desperately trying to fill with attention, and that is gross.
So you don't worry about like being at the holiday party with your wife and you talk to somebody 5 minutes and then they turn around and they're like, "That guy wasn't that funny. I don't get it." I don't know. For me, like, being a media personality is different, but sometimes you feel like you got to, like, the urge. But I think you're right. I mean, like, if you try to do it all the time, it then you lose your identity. And
yeah, like, if someone at her holiday party is expecting me to be funny all the time, I'm like, "Well, you didn't sell me any insurance." So I guess we're both bad at our jobs. I don't know.
Can you tell people your sort of origins? Because, you know, you from New York City, you went to Columbia.
Yeah, I got bit by a radioactive spider. It was a whole thing.
Yeah, so like, what? How do you go from Ivy League institution to travel, literally traveling the country like 150 days a year doing comedy?
Well, I've pared it down now. I used to do about 300. And people would always say to me, like, "Man, you do so many shows." And I'm like, "How often do you go to work?"
Right. Like, 5 days a week?
Yeah, exactly. So, I started out trying to be a sports writer, and I was the youngest baseball beat writer in the country. I was 20 years old, covered a World Series, and then the .com bubble burst, and that sucked because all the like mid-level writers were coming back to entry-level jobs, and I just kind of started doing stand-up to pass the time. The way that I put it in my book is, it was like being thrown into the ocean and finding out I was a fish the whole time. Mm-hmm. Like, it was the first time, like, I felt I could breathe. I felt it was natural.
Well, were you writing jokes the whole time? Like, were you performing in front of? Because, like, to go from like that to on stage is a huge jump.
Well, I had tried stand up just as a thing that I wanted to do, and originally I was doing stand up to promote my writing, and you know, my writing was always, I always leaned toward funny. Like when I was doing sports writing, I always tried to put something funny in there. I love doing columns because in columns you could be funny. You didn't just have to be like,
right.
It was a 3-2 pitch. Like you actually were able to be funny. And so, I was writing, like I wrote for Sports Illustrated. And I think the column that like kept the job for me for a couple of years was I wrote a whole thing about how I'm not mad at steroid users because as a writer, I use Google, which is a performance enhancing drug.
That's good.
And it was, I wrote about, I actually called out Barry Bonds for using steroids before the Balco scandal broke. Just basically saying like, we all know it's happening. And I did this whole thing where I challenged readers. I was like, I will give $100 to the first person who wears a hollowed out cantaloupe as a helmet to a Giants game. And like, just ridiculous stuff like that. And it was fun. It was a lot of fun. And so stand-up writing is different in that like people have to get it immediately. When you write a column, people can go back and reread a paragraph and go, oh, that's what I missed. And so it's a different format, but at the same time, it's still writing.
Yeah. It's fascinating because then there's the writing part of it, which it does have to be succinct. Then there's the delivery, which either makes or breaks it. We got to pause just really quick for a minute here. We're with Steve Hofstetter, a comedian. He's at the Funny Bone in Hartford, which is in Buckland Hills in Manchester tonight at 7 p.m. It's just easy to just Google his name or the Funny Bone for tickets. And there's actually a ticket strata where you can just go to the show, but you could also spend some time with Steve as well if you'd like to. Is it after or before?
It's the meet and greet is before, but also be careful. Don't buy from a reseller. Very often people will just Google the show and they'll be like, oh my God, tickets are $400. And it'd be like, no, that's a scammer.
Right. So go to
my website or the club's website.
Got it.
Do I have any parents in the crowd? Yeah. For the parents here, I want to make sure you know this. You're not special. And I'm tired of your garbage. Because parents walk around like having a kid makes you special. And that's not true. Raising a good kid, that makes you special. Just having one. Raccoons do that constantly.
Steve Hofstetter, again, 7 p.m. tonight at Funny Bone in Hartford. It's at Buckland Hills in Manchester, and there is some seats still available joining us here in studio. You do a lot of, like, political stuff and a lot of personal stuff, right? Mm-hmm. You do a lot of stuff about yourself. And, I sort of glommed on to the political side. I watched Me, Myself, and Id.
Me, Myself, and Id. It's also a play on ID.
I didn't know how to pronounce it, but yeah.
Yeah, it's and, purposeful.
You let the audience know right away, like, if they don't deal in metaphor, then they won't want to head for the exits. And it's highbrow stuff. And some of it's really heady. And I'm just curious, and would you characterize yourself as a progressive comedian?
Yeah, progressive is actually the word I prefer using. Like, I don't think I'm a liberal. I don't think I'm a leftist. I'm a progressive. They're different things.
So how would you distinguish?
I think, a liberal is a bit of a Pollyanna progressive. It's, someone who wants the best for everyone. And, like, that's nice. But at a certain point, it's greatest good for greatest number. At a certain point, you have to be a realist. And I want society.
So it's like a capitalistic liberal.
Well, I mean,
there's got to be some losers, even with a progressive approach.
Well, no, I just mean that not everyone can get everything because some people want things at the expense of other people. And so at a certain point, you have to, like, the basis of the Bill of Rights is you have unlimited freedoms until it infringes on someone else's freedom. You have unlimited freedom to play your music as loud as you want until your neighbor wants to go to sleep. Like, there are certain concessions we make as a society.
Right.
And so that's, to me, it's finding that balance. It's moving forward and understanding, like, oh, here's someone who is marginalized and doesn't need to be, but, we do have to be realistic.
Have you given a lot of thought since the election?
I'm sorry, what was that? Yes.
I mean, in a lot of ways, some people view it as, the Republicans were pocketbook and the Democrats were social issues and it didn't succeed, right? So I'm curious if do you recalculate your act because of it? Or
No. I mean, my beliefs are my beliefs. Now, the set that I'm doing right now isn't inherently political. It's mainly about my mental health and journey with anxiety and things like that. But at the same time, like, I don't think all the social critic stuff I was doing in Me, Myself, and Id was political. It was just politicized stuff. Like the idea that a gay person shouldn't feel bad about being gay shouldn't be political. Like that shouldn't be a voting issue. That should just be a humanitarian issue.
And you brought up Dave Chappelle, and he was very controversial with some of his trans comments. And I, you know, Matt Saroy's our producer. We, you know, he loves comedy. I love comedy.
Yeah.
And I'm a big free speech guy, and I'm always fascinated by. I don't know the answer. These aren't leading questions. So I don't know. It's a journey. Like
the good news is I do. So let's go.
Okay. Good. But that also leads me to like you know like some people I know that they have their views and they're unassailable, right? I mean, there's.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm curious about your open mindedness about certain things, but like with Chappelle, like. I don't agree with him, but I also am not ready to say he can't say it.
Well, okay, so the vast majority of people who have ever posted anything online about free speech have no idea what those words mean. Free speech, when it comes to the First Amendment, means the government cannot arrest you for what you say.
Right.
That's all it means. It doesn't mean you can't get fired. It doesn't mean people won't buy your product. Like, that would be a horrific society to live in. Like, if you walked into work on Monday.
Because no one would speak their minds. Is that your point?
Yeah. If you walked into work on Monday. Well, no. I mean the other way around. I mean, if you walked into work
on Monday. Or if you were protected in all circumstances, you could do and say whatever you want.
That would be horrific. Yeah. If you walked into work on Monday and went to your boss and said, I'm going to kidnap your children. You think your boss isn't allowed to fire you over that?
Right.
You think you're allowed to just threaten your boss? Like, no. Not only does the First Amendment only apply to government, but there are 9 common exceptions to the First Amendment that the vast majority of First Amendment crusaders have never heard of or don't understand.
But do you look at comedy as like a safe space to say? I mean, because I always, when I've talked to comedians in the past, it's like they're pushing the envelope and that's what they do. That's like sort of how they're wired and they think that's their mandate.
Well, pushing the envelope for the sake of pushing the envelope is stupid. Pushing the envelope for the sake of making a point that's important to you, great. But if you're pushing the envelope just to be a provocateur, you're an idiot. Like, just because you want to be cool because you were bullied earlier? Like, it just, to me, you have every right to say anything you want on stage within the law. Obviously, there are certain things, hate speech and things like that, that are literally not protected by the First Amendment, but also, like you can't go up on stage and yell fire. Like there are certain things that you cannot do. However, the crowd has every right to respond with their money,
right, and not go
right. Yeah. And the idea that like you have First Amendment rights to say whatever you want, but the person criticizing you doesn't. Come on,
right?
Be an adult.
He's Steve Hofstetter. He's tonight at Funny Bone in Hartford. I mean, you know, it's just I love to see how you dealt with certain issues. I thought it was really compelling stuff. And so
Thank you. This
set is different, you know, that you're doing tonight.
Yeah.
And you know, we have to take another break. But the one thing I want to get into is that are you honing this for another special? Like, because comedians basically like write a set, perform it for a stretch of time, and then go off and then write another set and then perform it for a stretch of time.
I mean, there are some people who write one set and perform it forever, which is sad. Right. But yeah, this is one where I'm right now in the development process where I could record this if I wanted to, but I think that there's more to do. And so it is the full set, but I'm still playing with it.
Tweaking it.
Yeah.
And when you do a special, do you produce it on your own or did you have like go with through a Netflix or do you have that kind of dynamic?
I've been producing on my own. I mean, I have almost 3 million followers on various platforms. So like I have the luxury of I could just produce it, put it out there, have complete creative control. And that's an awesome place to be in right now.
Yeah. Steve Hofstetter, comedian. He's at Funny Bone tonight. It's at the Buckland Hills Mall at 7:00. If you just go to, I think the best way might be to hartford.funnybone.com and you can go right to their calendar and they have all the artists who are going to be their performers and you can just click on buy tickets. And there's one ticket where you can actually get some time with Steve and ask him some questions. I have like some career touring stuff I want to get to or like the economy conversation we just had. Which one do you want first?
I would love to talk about the messaging in the election and the economy.
Yeah, okay.
I would love to talk about that because people keep talking about how like, oh, the Democrats didn't message right and they were messaging social over economy. The thing that they did wrong was not message. It's not how they message about the economy. It's that they didn't say why things are expensive. Things are more expensive now because corporations raised prices. It's very, very simple. The U.S. economy is the envy of the rest of the world. We have dealt with global inflation better than every other developed country. And that is absolute scientific fact. That is indisputable. However, and not only that, but the idea of like, well, we're going to vote for Trump because he's better for the economy. How? I would like someone to tell me how.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the cutting taxes, bringing energy prices down is mainly the argument. Like, I don't disagree with you. I believe that...
Wait a second. I don't want to gloss over that.
What?
Cutting taxes for who?
For who? Well, I mean, I think that we have to see what the tax plan is. I mean, you're saying that the consensus is going to cut taxes only for the wealthy, like he did last time, if he makes those tax cuts permanent. But
I'm just saying
conceptually that's what their argument is. They cut taxes and lower energy prices through increased production.
Yeah, I know. It's weird that I believe that not only will he do what he already did, but then what he's saying he's going to do again. Like, he has specifically said that is what his plan is. And so we have a choice. Do we believe that what he is going to do, what he promised that he's going to do, or do we think he's a liar? And the only way to think he's better for the economy is to think he's a liar, because he has promised to put in tariffs, which are terrible for the economy. He has promised to deport millions of people, which is terrible for the economy.
So we could get into a long, long conversation on this, because I did this yesterday with another guest for another reason. I believe that the mass deportation thing, I can't get my arms around any of that stuff. But when it comes to, you know, in terms of the economy, the one thing I've come to realize is that the whole drill, I believe in a multifaceted, like, energy policy. You got to cultivate, you know, the electric stuff with the hydrogen. Do all of it, right? I still think you need to do oil and gas until the other stuff is viable, whether it's wind, solar, or electric. But my point is, like, but now the whole open up the drilling, I really see it as a way to bring those prices way down and then starve out our enemies like Iran. Like, but I do actually think that that's not a terrible concept.
But we already produce the vast majority of the gas that we use. Like, America already does that. And not only that, but do you know what state led America in terms of green energy? Texas. And then that stopped because of politics. That stopped because suddenly green energy became looked at as, instead of a way to advance in the world, it became looked at as like, oh, green energy is woke. Like, no, it's not. It is just the current energy.
So if you were in Harris's ear, what would you have told her to say?
I would have told her to hit it really hard on the idea of, we are being gouged by corporations. They are making record profits. The idea that gas prices have to be so high. Okay, then why did gas companies make more profit in 2000? They made more profit in 2021 than they made in the decade previously. So that's not okay. That's a corporation doing that. That is not a president.
But then,
doing that.
Like, you've seen market forces start to go at that a little bit, right? Like, I mean, Target and other places are starting to cut prices because consumers are starting to adjust their behavior because of it. But you don't believe in market forces going
all the way? No, I absolutely do believe in market forces. But at the same time, like, when people are like, "Oh, look at the price of eggs," and it's like, yeah, the price of eggs shot up because the egg cartel, basically Big Egg, I don't know what you call it. Yeah, Big Egg, Jumbo Egg, because they raised their prices. They had there was a short supply. They had a huge outbreak of a disease, and so there's a short supply. So they raised their prices, and they noticed that consumers were still willing to pay for them, right, while complaining. So they kept raising their prices, and they went from $1 a dozen to $6 a dozen. And once it got to $6 a dozen, it became a story, and people were like, "Hey, this is too much." And so then the egg people were like, "Hey, let's make it down to $3 or $4 a dozen." And people were like, "Oh, well, at least it's not six." Instead of going, "Why does it have to be that high?" And when you can demonize a political party for what a corporation is doing, corporations are going to gouge as much as possible.
Hmm. Steve Hofstetter, comedian playing.
I know, hilarious.
No, but I mean, listen, you asked to talk about it.
It's important to me. I think it's important for people to know that.
And these conversations are good to have. And I'm a big believer in open dialogue, whether I disagree or agree with you. I'm not that kind of host. You'll be at the Funny Bone, Hartford, but it's in Manchester,
yes.
7 p.m. tonight, and you can get tickets. Like I said, if you go to hartford.funnybone.com, there's already a lot of people are heading that way, but there are some tickets available. We have to take a break in a minute here, but I guess I'll squeeze in one thing before I get to your life on the road. Who's your favorite comedian?
My favorite comedian of all time is Bill Hicks, and I like to say that I strive to be what Hicks was if he didn't hate his audience. He was very combative, but so much of his stuff still holds up. I was raised listening to George Carlin and Dick Gregory and folks like that. That's who I admire.
So when you were your parents consumers of comedy, or did you?
My dad was a big comedy fan. He played me like those old albums, and he had a basic rule, which was you don't get in trouble if it's funny enough, which is a fantastic rule to grow up with. Like, there was at one point where my dad and my brother had like a big argument, and my dad yelled, "Go to hell." And my brother said, "Maybe we can carpool."
That's a good
line. And like, that's, you don't get in trouble for
that.
It's
an icebreaker.
It's too good.
That's great.
I'm not making fun of men. I'm making fun of cavemen. There's a difference. We're all born cavemen, but we have the opportunity to stand upright, take our knuckles off the ground, and evolve. Not every guy does. I enjoy scaring cavemen. Oh, it's fun, and it's easy. You just walk up to them, lean in, say something simple. Just lean in and say, "Gender-neutral bathrooms." Cavemen are terrified of gender-neutral bathrooms, despite having them at home for quite some time.
I thought that was really clever.
Thank you.
I don't totally agree with you, but I thought that you grew up in a gender-neutral bathroom.
Yeah,
I mean, that's...
And also, like, if anyone's traveled, they know that, like, outside of the U.S., for the most part, bathrooms are gender neutral. And they're not gender neutral of, like, oh, there's 30 people using urinals and stalls next to each other. They're gender neutral in the idea that everybody gets their own private little room.
Yeah.
Which is how it should be, because what we're doing in there is gross.
I like the bit, too, that how men's bathrooms probably are the worst place on earth.
Oh, they're horrific. By the way, that joke bothered so many people. They're like, oh, I guess he's never had to clean a woman's bathroom. I'm like, yeah, you know what? They're all gross. I'm not saying that women's bathrooms are palaces.
But men's are way worse.
They're just so full of gross.
It's so true. The voice is Steve Hofstetter. He's a comedian. He's going to be at the Funny Bone Comedy Club tonight in Manchester at 7 p.m. I wanted to ask you a little lifestyle-y kind of thing.
Sure.
You know, because you perform, you said you used to do 300 dates.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, I look at your schedule, and I got to tell you, and the older I get, the more I kind of want to chill. I mean... If I just went through this pre-Thanksgiving, the 19th, the 20th, the 21st, the 22nd, the 23rd, and we're talking from Connecticut to New York to New Jersey to Pennsylvania, and then you're going to go on to Ohio, Indiana.
Yeah, I mean this
California. I mean,
this is an easy run because all these are, you know, some of these drives are less than 2 hours.
But I know you're honing your material till you feel like it's perfect enough to record it, but. Do you enjoy delivering relatively the same thing every night?
Well, everything's a little different. Like I'm always working on something new.
Might throw something different in.
Right. And that will change the complexion of the entire set potentially. Not only that, but the jokes I'm doing are it's subjects I enjoy talking about. It's things like when I did my special, The Recipe, and I talked about losing my dad, that set took something out of me every night. That set was grief, and that was difficult. Like this set is just it's fun, it's enjoyable, it's silly, and also like every show we end with a Q&A, and so that's different every time. And sometimes it's just the most fun. And
yeah,
so
the variety of the house, I would imagine, would make a difference.
Absolutely.
You know, since we've had a lot of serious conversations,
yeah.
Do you want to give me 90 seconds?
Of stand-up?
Of something? I don't know. Like, did you want to give... I mean, I just give you the opportunity. If you don't want to do it, you don't have to.
No, I could tell you what I've been talking about. I mean, I told you the whole thing about, like, anxiety. And, like, one of the things I talk about is anxiety medication. Like, I take... So, I don't recommend medication to other people because I'm not a doctor. And if you recommend medication to other people and you're not a doctor, the legal term is idiot. or health secretary in 2 months. But the idea of like, okay, my wife and I both take anxiety medication. We both take medication for anxiety, but we take different medication. Like I take sertraline and she takes birth control. They both help with my anxiety, you know? So it adds up.
that's good. I like that. Why do you go into this field if you have anxiety? Is it like you just want to overcome? Is it a challenge thing? You want to overcome it?
Well, that's part of what I talk about. The idea that like I didn't know I had anxiety when I became a comedian because I'm 45. So I'm of the generation that when something was a bit different about you as a kid, the medical diagnosis was he's weird.
Yeah. Or suck it up is another one.
Well, which is better than it used to be, which was she's a witch. So we're evolving, which is nice, you know?
So you get joy from the differentiation in audiences? That mean, because does it ever feel like when it feels like a grind, is that when you know to stop?
Well, I do one show in each market. That's it.
So you don't do a 7 to 9 and you don't do 3 days?
I don't do that. I used to get bored when I was doing like a full week at a club. Because for some reason, the same stage, and also, you know, the staff is the same too.
Right.
And it's just like, oh my God, this poor woman had to hear this joke 6 times this week. And when it's a different crowd every time, stand-up is a conversation of energy. And so the energy is different. And then like I'm learning to play. Imagine if you played a guitar, but it was a different guitar every night. And you had to learn a little bit. Yeah, the frets are in the same place. The strings are in the same place. But the sound is a little bit different. And you had to figure out how to make it sound the same. That's a challenge.
You know, there's two, I guess they were viral, but there are two videos out there of you shutting down a heckler. And we don't have to necessarily comment on that right here. But you talked about the audience. What if, like, right away you know the house is bad? Like, is that how hard is that to get through it?
Every now and then it does feel like work. Like every now and then you go, okay, I'm going to suck it up. But at the same time, like I haven't had to look at the time, you know, so before I was a comic, when I would, you know, do these odd jobs here and there and I answered phones at a chicken place and like every 20 minutes I was looking at the time being like, oh my God, it's only been 20 minutes. Right. It feels like it's been 4 hours. I haven't had to do that in 20 years. And that's amazing. And so if there's one night where I'm like, oh, that was a little bit of work. Oh, no, I had to feel like I worked for 45 minutes. I think I'll be all right.
So the when you do your routine, it's so immersed in your brain, you know where to go next. Like, you just flow with whatever pops in, or do you have a premeditated progression?
I mean, pretty much. Like, I'm a storyteller, and so I know what part of the story comes next.
Yeah.
When you're writing a new bit, sometimes you'll mess it up. Every now and then, like if I'm doing a short set, like I was many years ago when I was auditioning for a club, I rearranged the order of my set because I had to like pack it into 10 minutes. And I did the same joke twice in a row because I finished the joke and I immediately went into what should have been the next joke, but it was the wrong one. And so I did in a 10-minute set, I did the same joke twice. And it was, I didn't get into that club.
I went to Comics Come Home and Bill Burr did something similar. Bill Blankenberg did something similar because he was one of like 20 comics and I think it's for that exact reason. So
yeah, it happens, but if you make a mistake up there, you just have to acknowledge it. Every now and then, like there was once where I did a callback to a joke I didn't do. Like I forgot that I didn't do the setup and it got like a little bit of a laugh and I just stopped and I just go, hey, for those of you who laughed, you're very nice people, but you are wrong. You do not understand what I just said.
Because I didn't tell the joke before. Steve Hofstetter, he's tonight at 7 o'clock at Funny Bone Hartford, which is actually at Buckland Hills in Manchester. And you can go to stevehofstetter.com or you can go to hartford.funnybone.com to get some of the remaining tickets. You know, I'm just curious. You've written books and you've had specials. Like what you talked about how like if you could do this for X amount of years doing the same thing you've done for 20 and it never felt like work. Like, what's your end game? Like, what is your blue sky?
I want to be able, honestly, I want to be able to create whatever I want. You know, I got to a movie last year, which was super fun. And, you know, if I have an idea for something,
a movie or you were in a movie?
Both. I was a producer and I was one of the stars. And it was,
What's the name of it?
So fun. It's called Handyman from Hell. It was Lifetime bought it. It's kind of a send-up of that genre. It's like it's very formulaic in that genre, but there are also parts where we're clearly mocking that genre, which was fun to see the Lifetime audience both love it and hate it, depending on what they wanted.
Right.
But like stuff like that was, you know, it's super fun. Every now and then, I just get an idea for something I want to do, and whether it's a podcast or a column or a movie or a TV show or an hour of stand-up. My goal is just for enough people in this industry to trust me to go, yeah, give it a shot. I'm sure it'll be good.
Now, you know, you you've probably made a fair amount of money and you probably don't need to work 150 days. You probably don't need to come in the radio for an hour and spend this kind of time. First of all, I appreciate it. I mean, I'm not trying to sort of clone a Howard Stern or anything, but I love process because I think it's fascinating how people work. And I like when I have a free moment, I should be thinking about creating more when I'm like, I want to take a nap. You know what I mean? So people who are efficient like that kind of blow me away.
Well, and by the way, for the listeners, it is not like Howard Stern. All of the women in bikinis have been quiet this whole time.
Right.
They just line the edge of the room and they're just very, very
quiet. That's
why
we have no cameras.
Yeah, they're very quiet. No, it's something where like, look, I like doing that stuff. And the fact is that like, yeah, I'm selling a couple hundred tickets on a Tuesday and that's a ton of freedom, which is great. But also at the same time, like when it comes down to it, I am a creative person. I want to go out there and create. And so, yeah, I could do fewer shows. Absolutely. And maybe one day I will. But right now I'm healthy. I'm young enough. And so I will.
Steve Hofstetter, you can catch him in Manchester tonight at Funny Bone Hartford. And then if you miss him, you can go down to the city tomorrow in New York and see him at City Winery.
No, you can't. That one's sold out.
Oh, it's sold out.
Yeah.
What about Avenel Performing Arts Center?
Avenel, there are some tickets.
Okay. And then City Winery in Philly. So you got a little relationship with those folks.
Yeah.
It's great to meet you. I wish you the best and really appreciate the time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Steve Hofstetter.